So this morning we were going into some Tonglen practice, some giving and receiving. And I was also talking a little bit about bodhicitta and about how, yes, you can be practicing for the sake of all beings. But if you want to make it specific and simple, then you just care for the being that, or the beings that you're with. Just do that. And that in general, the movement of bodhicitta at least starts from moving from I to we, me to us, until eventually those categories sort of fall away. So we started off practicing Tonglen with our future selves, and we did it with the refuge in our heart. There are a lot of different ways of practicing Tonglen. It's something that's been done for certainly over 1,000 years. So there's not one particular way, there's not one right way to do Tonglen, which we have to have. So yes, sometimes you practice with the refuges, you know, like the refuge tree in front of you, just drawing on their support. Or you can have the refuge above your head. You can practice without a sense of the refuge there. You can just feel, okay, you're taking in the suffering, letting it dissolve into your heart. Sometimes it's done with a sense of that you have your sort of self-clinging, your self-intendency in your heart, and that the what you take in sort of dissolves that away. Because all this is just ways of training our mind. But having experimented with different ways and teaching it with different people, I think you can practice and experiment for yourself. But it does seem to work quite well for most people to have a sense of the refuge right at the core of your being, and to take in the suffering and let it dissolve into the refuge. So we aren't trying to take the sufferings of the world on our shoulders. And it's from that deep source, that deep resource, that the care and the love and the encouragement go out. So in that way, we're, as I mentioned in the second meditation that we did, where we included all of us here, and then whoever we might be doing metta towards today, perhaps from our metta wall. We're training our mind, and we're training ourselves to be open and available to life, but to relate to it from that deeper level. From that level which is represented by the refuge. And we're also training in opening to life without being overwhelmed. And one of the very, very clever and cunning things about Tonglen is that you can use it in all situations. You don't have to be sitting on your meditation cushion. Yep, there's somebody in front of you and they're upset. So you can just open to that. You breathe in. You respond to the upset, you take it into your heart, and you breathe out support, encouragement, care in that way. And you can also work, not only can you use it whatever situation you're in, life situation you're in, you can also use it whatever mental state you're in. So it's a way of feeling what's going on, but without just closing down into our own small world. So supposing that I'm sitting here and I'm trying to practice, but maybe I say I slept very well last night, but supposing I haven't slept last night, so I'm a bit drowsy, a bit sleepy. I can either go, well, I can't really meditate because I'm just very sleepy, or I can practice in this way, and as I breathe in, I breathe in the sleepiness of all beings. I breathe in all that, you know, that just sort of, that sort of sense of, oh, it's all just too much, and oh, I just need to lie down. You just breathe all that in, and you just take it into the refuge. And you breathe out care and love and energy, whatever's needed, yeah? Or you're sitting there and you think, oh, you know, my heart's just closed on Mondays, you know, it's just there've been financial cuts, you know, we just can't keep it open, you know, day after day. So, you know, it's just, you know, there's just nothing happening. You know, I'm just not with it. So then you catch that, you really feel what that feels like, the oh yes, what, not good to feel like that, but we really feel it. And then we're aware, well, we're not the only being in the universe who feels like this. Yeah. There are all sorts of people who just, you know, their hearts just aren't closed on Mondays. You know, they're closed, you know, all through the year except for months with a K in. You know, they're just closed nearly all the time. Now, don't try and work out whether they're months with a K in. Thank you. That's the point. Yeah. Yeah, so then what you do is you breathe in all that suffering of just all those beings who just have closed their hearts to life. Who've just closed down, who've just closed in, who've just gone into a protective shell. And yeah, you know, they're going, you know, I'm not coming out, you can't make me. Oh, no. All the suffering of that, you just breathe that in, you take that in, you relieve them of that, and you breathe out, you know, the encouragement and the support, the conditions that would enable them to open their hearts. So whatever it is, whatever old mental state it is, you can always do this practice with it. If anyone can think of something that you can't do tonglen with, do say. So it's a universal practice in the sense that it's always applicable, and things which would usually separate us off actually start to connect us. Yeah. We're drawn out of ourselves by realizing that, yeah, actually we're all in the same boat, yeah, with other human beings. It's not just us. It's not just us who feels bad about ourselves, you know. It's not just us who's the worst person in the world, you know. So we breathe in the feelings of all the worst people in the world, yeah, and then we breathe out love and care and support, yeah, again and again, yeah. So in that funny kind of way, we're connected. We're even using, we're skillfully using our sense of separation, all that, to connect us. Yeah. You get the idea.
Yeah. I have a question with that, because when I try to do it in everyday, sort of on the spot, problem,
yeah.
Sometimes getting a quick sense of the refuge is. Have you got any tips on that? Because when we're here, we're in very supportive conditions.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, in everyday life, when we're confronted with suffering, it's not always so easy as it is when we're on retreat, sitting in the shrine room, to make that sort of instant connection with the refuge. Yeah?
I can connect with people suffering.
Yeah.
That sense of transforming it through touching enlightenment. That's a bit harder.
So you can connect with people suffering, but that sense of transforming it is harder to. It's harder to draw on a sense of a source of something which would help to transform it. Is that what you're?
I guess the being present with it transforms it, but the sense of actually something bigger than me.
Having the refuge in the heart.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. Maybe it's not a question.
Well, I think we always just do what we can do. I think as your practice goes on, it becomes easier to just connect into the refuge. You know, it's like one of the things about mantra, for instance, is that as you do it again and again and again over a long period of time, it's like the mantra starts to encapsulate. It starts to be enough just to make that link with love, with compassion, with wisdom, with energy, and so on. So there comes a point where with suffering, just a touch into the mantra will invoke something beyond yourself. I don't think you have to necessarily almost sort of feel it that strongly. You can almost use the mantra as a sort of invocation of something. It's enough in a way just to wish that that Tara's compassion, that Tara may help this being, that Tara, you know, or whoever your Yidam happens to be, yeah. that will do it. And if you really can't make the connection, well, then I don't want to underestimate just what we can do by being prepared just to be with the person, yeah. Just even as little old me. Yeah, if we're just prepared to sit with this person, with whatever's going on for them, with their difficulty, that's such a gift. Even just to give someone our awareness, our full attention, is such a gift. Buddhism has various lists of, you know, ways in which we can be generous. You know, we can give, you know, material goods, we can give confidence, and so on and so forth. I don't think I've ever actually seen on a list just giving awareness, but just to be fully present with someone, to really be there and listen to them and take them in and be open to them. That in itself is tremendous. often even just that sets up the conditions for someone to start to find their own resources. It's like they're sort of thrown around in themselves and not accepting the situation. Just having someone prepared to be there in the situation, just present. Without going into pity or horrified anxiety. Just being. Which raises a whole question about, one of the questions I've got is about horrified anxiety. How are we doing? Yeah, maybe let's just go into this a little bit and we'll do some practice. You remember that each of the positive emotions has a far enemy, a complete opposite. So, yeah. The opposite of metta would be, you know, aggression and violence and cruelty and so forth. But then each one has a near enemy, something which looks like the genuine article, but isn't. You know, it's like having a fake Rolex, you know, that you bought for £3. It may even have been the genuine article which your ego clinging then kind of colonized and took over. You know. So with compassion, it's usually said that the near enemies are horrified anxiety and pity. So horrified anxiety is, you are responding to the suffering, but you're responding by turning back to your feeling about yourself and your response, and the result is just, it's, you don't know what to do about it, it's all too much. Again, you know, your things have got out of control, you can't, your ego sense can't cope with it. And so there's this sense of horrified anxiety, or there's pity where you're relating, but you're relating downwards, as it were, you know, to those poor people who are suffering down there. So you're not really standing alongside, shoulder to shoulder with that suffering. Yeah. You're keeping, in a sense, at a safe distance from it. And incidentally, we do all these near enemies to ourselves as well. So we discover, you know, we start to feel some sort of suffering or some unpleasant emotion in ourselves. And one of the responses we can have is a sort of horrified anxiety. You know, I didn't realize I was the sort of person who could feel like this, and we don't know what to do about it. Again, it doesn't fit with our ego image of ourselves, and so we go into a sort of internal horrified anxiety, or we start to feel bad in some way and we go into self-pity. Oh, poor me. So we do the same thing kind of internally. And the more we've really allowed our awareness to go into all the different aspects of our feelings, the more we've gone beyond our own tendency to horrified anxiety and self-pity about our own feelings, the easier it will be for us to actually sit with somebody else's. Yeah, the more that we're, the more work that we've done to be with our own difficult emotions, our own anger, our own frustration, our own grief, our own jealousy, our own pride, our own ignorance, etc., 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 the easier it will be for us then to sit with somebody else's. Been talking a few times these last few days about people who I feel, you know, I'm really confident have gone quite a long way down the path. Another of the things which strikes me about them is that they don't seem to be shocked. They're not shocked by being told that, oh, you know, so-and-so got really angry or somebody, so-and-so did something really terrible. And I'm sort of interested in that because our image of, you know, more realized beings very often is that they're sort of pure and holy and sort of above. You know, they're above the world in some kind of way. Whereas my experience of those people who I feel have really practiced deeply is that they've really got to know the whole of themselves, which means they've got to know their capacity to be in any of the six realms. They've learned to... they've sort of come so close to all the different aspects of themselves, including all the depths, all the darkness. It's as if they've seen, you know, their capacity to be murderous, their capacity to be mean, their capacity to be really inauthentic, and so on. Yeah. And rather than kind of holding that at complete arm's length, they haven't indulged it, but they've really taken awareness into that. Again, they've taken a kindly awareness into all that. Yeah. And because of that, they're actually in relationship with all those different aspects, and therefore they're transformed. But because they've been there, because they've taken that kindly awareness into all those dark corners and cupboards and, you know, black places, they're not shocked by what human beings can do. They're not, you know, we kind of hide away all our kind of nasty little thoughts because we feel like, oh, you know, they wouldn't relate to that sort of thing because they're all shining and bright. But actually, they know what we're like because they know what they're like. They've really kind of gone into all that. Yeah. And that, again, is part of what helps them to feel the suffering of living beings and to relate to it and to be open to it. If you haven't dealt with something in yourself, it's hard to relate to it when it appears in front of you in someone else. So with horrified anxiety partly comes out of a sense of not being, you know, life is not in control, which is back to self-clinging. It partly comes from things which we haven't faced up to in ourselves. If we haven't faced up to the fact that life can be really hard, it can be really suffering, and bad things can happen, then when they do, that's not our view of how life should be. And so, again, it just makes us anxious, it makes us uneasy. But horrified anxiety can also partly come from this sense that not just that we want to help, but that we should be able to help, that somehow we have to be able to help. And because life is all about conditionality, it's not that simple. Again, it's partly feeling like, you know, life should be under our control, and sort of having this sort of self-image which, you know, feels it has to be able to fix things. And yeah, sure, let's fix all the suffering we can fix anywhere, anytime. Absolutely. But one of the traditional reflections for developing upekkha, for developing equanimity, is the fact that beings have their own karma. So because of that, we can set up all the conditions we like, you know, so that suffering won't happen or it will be made better. But we never know if we've got all those conditions. And finally, each person has their own mind, their own body, and we can have an influence on that, but we can't directly sort of intervene and make things all right. So, if you like, when we're engaging with the world, there's both the compassion that really, really does want to help, that really wants the suffering to come to an end, you know, which wants to be able to just sort of take all those pieces of paper off the wall and, you know, sort of say, no, it's all okay now. Along with the wisdom, which in this sense is a kind of equanimity, to see that, but we don't control everything. We can't guarantee any outcome at all. Even for those that we really love and care about, that we would really desperately want to see happy, there are no guarantees. And so we hold those two together. We hold a sense that, yeah, there's suffering and we want to do everything we can to help, along with a sense of we do what we can. We really do what we can, but then the outcome is not in our control. Life, you know, conditionality is complex. So say, people have their own karma. So we do what we can, but without expectations. Because if you feel like you have, it's somehow down to you to fix the suffering, that's asking the impossible of yourself. And so, of course, when you ask the impossible of yourself, you feel anxious and horrified at the prospect. And as we've seen, it's not just down to us. In a sense, we entrust things to those deeper resources. We entrust things to the qualities of enlightenment. We do our best to make a link to those deeper sources, and sometimes really remarkable things happen as a result of that. But there are no guarantees, because everyday life is on its own level finally won't turn out well. The one thing we can guarantee about life is that we shall lose everything that we've got, and then we'll die. You know, we can rely on that. That's really great. We can completely rely on that. So we don't just rely on our own resources. We draw on the deepest resources we can. We make all wishes that things go well. We're as present as we can be, with as open a heart as we can be, as in touch with the refugees as we can be. And that's the best that we can do. We just set up the conditions, and then whatever comes out of that, comes out of that. And sometimes we have to let go of our expectations. We can have positive wishes, but who knows? And we don't always know what's for the best anyway. There's a Tibetan story about, there's a young, sort of teenage boy. He's in a village somewhere in eastern Tibet. And his family have a horse. And his job is to look after the horse. And one day while he's leading the horse through one of the pastures, something startles it and it runs off. So it's lost. And he looks around, he can't find it. Starts to get dark, he goes home, he's scolded by his father. They've lost this really valuable possession of the family. So it's really serious for them. The next day, he and his father go looking, and eventually they find the horse along with two wild horses. And they manage to capture all three and bring them back. So now the family has three horses. But there are two wild horses, so the two wild horses need breaking in. And the boy is helping to do this, because he's been riding ever since he was big enough to be put on a horse. But one of the two is very difficult, and it throws him. And he breaks his leg, and can't ride, can't do anything for quite a long time. In fact, he's got a slightly deformed leg now. And he's the only son. And it's really, really unfortunate for the whole family. Months go by. He starts to limp around. And then one day, a whole lot of soldiers turn up from the local king. They come to the village, the local king's going to war with somebody else. They round up all the young men. They're going to take them into the army. But they don't take the young boy because he's got a bad leg. And what's the use of a young boy with a bad leg? So he's the only one who gets left behind. So you can see the point of the story is, we don't know, actually, in a sense, what's good and what's bad. We don't know what's valuable and what's not. We can make wishes. We can really wish that whatever's for the best, it may happen. But we can never be certain what's really right. So we just do our best in the situation. We just open to the situation. We invoke all the forces of the Dharma, and we're as present as we can be, and we leave it at that. We just accept, okay, whatever's going to happen, may it be for the best. And in our own practice, we just keep working, freeing our minds, letting go of, doing our best to let go of the anxieties, to let go of the attachments, and we gradually get freer and freer, freer and freer, so that we're not reliant on things turning out how we want them to. And eventually we get to the point in our practice where we actually start going looking for difficulties. Yeah, we really go and look for them, because then, well, firstly, you know, anything that you're avoiding gathers energy. Sort of anything that you don't, you're not prepared to look at, it's still there, but it kind of gathers strength from our energy of avoiding. And, but also, yeah, in your practice, at a certain point, you may find in the conditions you're under, okay, life is all right. So then your aim is to go even further. Your aim is to really draw out even your tendencies to aversion and craving. So you go actually say, all right, bring it on. Let's go a little bit further. Let's just push this a little bit. Let's discover how I do if I put myself under a slightly more difficult situation. More difficult conditions. Yeah, so there's something of a sort of warrior spirit that has to come into our practice, which is also a really positive emotion. All right, let's do some practice. Let's see if we can start with a sense of the refuge in our heart. It doesn't have to be a strong feeling, strong emotional thing. Start with, we may just be having a sense of invoking, of calling. With a sense, doing our best to trust that those deep resources are there. Let's bring our awareness to the ground. And if we can't connect very deeply or strongly with the ground, then with each in-breath, we breathe in the suffering of all beings who are ungrounded, who've lost that basic contact with Mother Earth. All those people in much worse states than us. People whose suffering has been such that they've just retreated into some attic room in their minds, lost touch with their bodies. Just breathe all that in. Into the refuge. And we breathe out groundedness, stability, contact with experience. Being able to stand one's ground. Bring awareness up into the body. Noticing how we are. We breathe in all the causes of suffering into the refuge. We breathe out loving kindness and care, filling our body. And anything which gets in the way of the practice, we include in the practice. So if we're distracted, we're aware that we're not the only being in the universe who's distracted. All that being scattered, being lost, is a cause of suffering. So we breathe in the distractedness of all living beings, all the sleepiness, all the self-doubt or whatever it is, into the refuge, and we breathe out whatever's needed. If there's tension, we breathe in the tension of all beings. And we breathe out a great deep out breath of relaxation from the heart of the refuges. We breathe out the complete okayness of enlightenment. Let's just practice for a few minutes. We can include more beings. All of us here and beyond. Just exploring into the practice in our own way. practice brings up anxiety. We breathe in the anxiety of all beings. And we breathe out support, encouragement, love, reassurance. It feels just too much to take on. We breathe in the suffering of all those who feel defeated by life. And we breathe out from the refuges, courage, confidence, the great lion's roar of the Dharma. Now, when we're ready, once again, we just relax, we just let go. We let go of that whole world that we created in the meditation. Just with whatever feeling we're left with, just experiencing. Okay, let's carry on. So I just want to make one more point about Tonglen, and then we'll have an open short meditation. So Tonglen's a very balanced practice in the sense that we really open to the causes of suffering in ourselves, in other people that we think of in the course of the practice, and in a way with all beings. But it's that opening to suffering is balanced by seeing the transformative effect, feeling, sensing the transformative effect of what we send out from the refuges. So as the practice goes on, we actually see people receiving what they need, getting the resources that they need. So they become happier, they become freer, they become more loving, they become more grounded, they become more energetic. So if you are doing Tonglen and you think of a friend of yours and you become aware that they have a tendency to anxiety, say, okay, you breathe that in and you send them from the heart of reality. You send them confidence. You send them a sense that it's life can be okay, that they can be okay. You send them courage. You send them reassurance. You send them relaxation. And you feel and sense, and if you can, see the effects of that. So you really see them transformed. So then there's a joy in the practice. So in that way, we're seeing both the suffering of samsara and the potential that people have. We all have the potential to be free. We all have the potential to be free from anxiety. So we really focus on that as well. So there's, in that way, there's a balance. We're not just focusing on suffering. We can really open to the suffering because we're open to the refuges and open to the possibility that we can go beyond suffering. So if we're sitting and we're aware, well, we're not really connecting with the practice because we're feeling grumpy, then, okay, we breathe in the grumpiness of all beings. And we breathe out. I always breathe out a kind of sense of humour about that grumpiness. But also, we breathe out, kind of ease and relaxation and a sense of caring and being open and nothing bothers us. And we send that to ourselves, but we send it to all beings. And we really feel into those positive qualities having an effect. It's like we absorb them in ourselves from the refuges. We really kind of take them into every cell of our being. And it goes out and out to all beings, to anyone we can think of. And all that grumpiness and all that spikiness and not being happy in your own skin and nothing's ever right and why is the food like this? And why do they do that? And why have I got a cold? And all that, just, we see that dissolve away completely. And so there's just sense of fulfillment. So the practice is balanced, and it's important that we get to a sense of what we're sending out from the refugees having an effect. Yeah. Taking away suffering, giving joy, giving freedom. So it's both an opening to suffering, but also a joyful response to suffering. Yeah. Okay, so let's now just have a short open period of meditation. I'm not going to say anything. Just practice in our own way. And then this evening will be fairly simple. It'll just be some mantra chanting and offerings, which we'll give particular significance to, which I'll talk about this evening. Maybe a reading, but quite a simple sort of evening.